Welcome, everybody, to the NFL Show on the Grueling Truth Sports Network. The NFL Show is brought to you by PathofPurity.direct. Make sure you check them out at PathofPurity.direct for a two-month supply for the price of one. I'm your host, Mike Goodpaster. Right now, I'd like to welcome in my co-host, Sam Teets. How you doing, Sam?
I'm doing great, Mike. How about you?
All right. And we have two guests today. Number one, Steve Rizzer. How you doing, Steve?
Very good, Mike. Thanks for having me.
All right. And Sam McGinnis. What's up, Sam?
I'm doing good. How are you?
You didn't say that like you're really doing good, Sam. What's wrong?
I'm fine. I'm doing good, actually. Had the NHL show last night. What could be better?
Yeah, nothing could be better than the NHL show. But today we're going to talk about Super Bowl 55, which I think may be a little bit better than the NHL show. And I would like to start off with McGinnis, who back in March came on the show and said there's no way the Buccaneers and Tom Brady could ever win a Super Bowl.
They're still not going to.
It doesn't matter. You said you didn't even think they'd make the playoffs.
I didn't say that.
Wait.
In the division.
Come on. Teets, do you remember how he told us their defense wasn't good enough?
McGinnis, I'm pretty sure you were very low on the Bucs. You might have changed tunes later in the offseason, but I'm pretty sure when we initially had you on, you were anti-Buccaneers making the playoffs.
I said they'd go like 10-6 or something like that and be second behind
Sam,
the Saints.
Sam, we have you recorded saying that. So we'll let it go for now, and then Monday we'll bring it back.
Go ahead and find that recording for me.
Okay, I'll find it. All right, I'm not like Nancy Pelosi. I'll actually go find the tape. All right, Steve Rizzer, let's start off here. Bucks Chiefs, does this surprise you as the Super Bowl matchup at all?
Absolutely not. I mean, I thought when the Bucks got Brady, they were going to be a Super Bowl contender. They weren't my Super Bowl favorite going into the season, but I definitely thought they were going to be a contender because the NFC was wide open with the Saints, the Seahawks, the Packers. There were the Rams. There were a ton of teams in the NFC. You saw all year how wide open it was, but this doesn't surprise me at all. I felt like last year with Brady in New England, I didn't feel like it was him. I felt like it was the weapons, and he definitely proved that this year with the season he had, and obviously the Chiefs. I picked them to win the Super Bowl before the season. I'm not surprised at all that they're here again. So I'm not shocked that this is the Super Bowl at all.
All right, Sam McGinnis. What's your take on this Super Bowl? What do you think's the key? Because to me, it looks like the key is Kelce and Tyreek Hill, and if they can be defended.
It comes down in my mind to actually keeping Patrick Mahomes off the field entirely as much as possible anyway, because if he's on the field, regardless of how good you are at defending that team, they are going to score points just because of how good that offense is.
All right, Teets, go ahead and answer the question since I asked it to you, and McGinnis just took it anyway.
Yeah, it comes down to whether or not the Chiefs are able to scheme around the fact that they don't have both their starting offensive tackles. So if Andy Reid and Eric Bieniemy come up with a game plan where they're getting the ball out quickly, Travis Kelce initially underneath, and that eventually opens up Tyreek Hill over the top, that's perfect. That's kind of what they did against Buffalo, except now you're going up against JPP and Shaq Barrett. You don't have your starting tackles on either side at this point. And Mike Remmers, this is the guy who was blocking for Cam Newton when Von Miller won the Super Bowl MVP a couple of years ago. So it's not good history for Mike Remmers. He's coming in and taking Eric Fisher's place, I believe. So this is going to be a very tough situation for them. But if they're able to get the ball quickly enough and maybe have a backfield back in the backfield there to help them out, then I think they will win this game. But it comes down to keeping Mahomes clean and keeping those pass rushers just a second off of Mahomes, giving him enough time to get the ball out.
Yeah, and Steve Rizzer, I think the biggest coach in this game is neither one of the head coaches. I think it's Todd Bowles. And when I look at Todd Bowles, I think he's one of the best defensive coordinators in football. I think the New York Jets screwed him over royally. I think he did a great job there, especially the first year or two. What's your take on the coaching matchup between these two teams?
Yeah, I think you make a good point that Todd Bowles, I mean, what he does is going to be big in this game. How he game plans in this game, because I think what he should do is he should do the opposite of what he did last time. I think he should rush four. He needs to rush four. He cannot blitz. I mean, Mahomes, 17 touchdowns, zero picks against the blitz. He cannot blitz. And two of his touchdown passes in the previous game was against the blitz. So he cannot blitz in this game. He's got to rush four, play zone coverage. That's what Todd Bowles is going to do. And I think Andy Reid is going to counter with that by getting rid of the ball quick. Because you know with Andy Reid, even though the Chiefs don't have two of their tackles, you know with 2 weeks to prepare, Andy Reid's going to game plan for that. Andy Reid is great coming off bye weeks. He's going to game plan for that. So I think it's the interesting matchup, the coaching matchup is going to be Andy Reid on offense and Todd Bowles on defense. And personally, in my opinion, I just think Andy Reid has a slight edge there, but just because of the talent Kansas City has on offense.
Well, if you look at the talent Tampa Bay has on defense, though, you have two of the best linebackers in football, Devin White and Lavonte David. Lavonte David's one of the best cover linebackers in football. So I think this is why the key matchup to me is Travis Kelce. I think Lavonte David is one of the few linebackers that can give him trouble, and I do think they will jam him off the line of scrimmage, Sam Teets.
Yeah, which is what they didn't do in Buffalo. And I was listening to the game live, and Tony Romo was practically begging the Buffalo Bills to just hit Travis Kelce before he got the line of scrimmage. And the Tampa Bay Buccaneers will do that. Lavonte David is one of the best coverage linebackers in football, one of the most underrated linebackers in football. So you have him, he's tremendous in coverage. And you have Devin White, who's athletic enough to maybe keep up with Travis Kelce, even if he's not the best coverage linebacker. So it'll be interesting to see how they match up there. We saw this against Buffalo, though. Travis Kelce was the one who opened up the game plan for Kansas City. Mahomes went to him early and often. He had, I think, close to 100 yards by halftime. He was averaging about 10 yards per catch. They were going to him underneath, and that forced the Bills to move their safeties around. Eventually, Tyreek Hill gets going over the top, and Tyreek Hill gets involved in the second half. That's what they're going to try to do again against Tampa Bay.
Let me do this. I'm going to start off with McGinnis, but we're going to go to all three of you when we ask this, if Steve Risser comes back. And I can't believe McGinnis already pissed off some guest, and he already left. But Tyreek Hill, Travis Kelce, if you're coaching against Kansas City, which guy is it more important for you to take away? McGinnis?
I'd probably go with Travis Kelce.
Why?
I think I don't know the numbers, but I feel like he's more dynamic
Tyreek Hill.
Yeah, thank you. Tyreek Hill. I think he's more dynamic than Tyreek Hill and brings more energy to the team as a whole. And if you can cut off energy from a team, I think that's a big win for your team during a game.
All right, Steve Risser. The question is, Tyreek Hill, if you're playing against him, Tyreek Hill or Travis Kelce, which guy are you most worried about?
It's Tyreek Hill, because you saw what he did to them in the previous matchup. I feel like the Bucs got to double Tyreek Hill. I think if it comes between Travis Kelce and Tyreek Hill, you made a good point about Lavonte David. I think Lavonte David could take Tyreek Hill, Devin White could stay with Travis Kelce. Tyreek Hill, you have to double him, because there's nobody in that Tampa Bay secondary that could cover him one-on-one, and that was proven in the first matchup. So Tyreek Hill is definitely the guy you got to be more worried about if you're the Bucs defense.
All right, Teets?
Yeah, well, Travis Kelce is the security blanket, but if you throw a three-yard pass to Tyreek Hill, there's not much stopping him from going 70 yards for a touchdown. So that's the bigger concern here, is when Tyreek Hill touches the football, it's instant fireworks. For Travis Kelce, you know he's going to rumble, but you can probably tackle him after 8 or 9 yards. That's not going to happen with Tyreek Hill. So I think Tyreek Hill is a more dangerous player here. And like Steve mentioned, he dominated against the Buccaneers last time they played. So I think Tyreek Hill has to be the bigger threat here. He's got the one you focus on initially, and eventually you'll figure out a way to deal with Travis Kelce.
All right, David Riccio says, Todd Bold, whoever that is, was a horrible coach. Remember, not everyone is head coach material. Stood on the sidelines like a cigar store Indian. Please, he sucked in New York.
I mean, he won 10 games.
He won 10 games in New York. And the problem is, the cigar store Indian is stuck up the ass of the Jets ownership, who do nothing to make that team better. I think to say that Todd Bowles failed there is absolutely asinine. I don't know if too many guys can ever succeed there until ownership does what they're supposed to do, Steve.
Yeah, and if you look at 2017, they were supposed to be one of the worst teams in football, and they were competitive in the middle of the year. They were 5-7 in the middle of the season. They ultimately fell off and went 5-11, but they were in a year where they were supposed to win like one game. They ended up winning 5 games, so Todd Bowles overachieved in 2017.
All right, James Clampa. Sam Teets, I'll let you respond to this. Down to it, Kansas City only lost to the Raiders. I think that was 40-32. But Brady has been on fire since losing to Kansas City 27-24. It's been hard to beat Brady twice in 1 year.
Well, in case you're paying attention, the Saints actually beat Brady twice in 1 year. So it's not inconceivable here.
I gave you a softball, Sam, because you're the veteran here.
Yeah, I know. I understand. But at the same time, I understand what you're saying. It's hard to beat Brady in this situation again, especially when it's in the playoffs and it's in the Super Bowl. But let me put it this way. While Brady's interceptions did not necessarily hurt the Buccaneers last week or even against the Saints because of how Drew Brees is playing, you can't be making those same mistakes against Patrick Mahomes when they have Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce. The Saints, Chiefs can move the ball much quicker down the field and score much faster than either the Saints or the Packers. So I think Tom Brady here, let's put it this way. It's more about Tampa Bay's defense this year than it is about Tom Brady.
All right, so James Ciampa, We'll go with McGinnis. We'll give you the softball. Brady does not do very good with home field advantage.
On whose planet? When has this been a thing? Oh, my goodness. I kind of liked when we were talking off the show, me and Mike, about this, though. Home field advantage here probably actually won't make that much of a difference because there's still going to be mixed fans in the stadium. So I don't see how it's truly home field advantage, minus the fact that this is the first time this is happening.
I mean, this is the thing. We've had basically, Steve Rizzer, two teams with home field advantage in the Super Bowl. And one of them's lost, one of them's won. That would have been not in their home stadiums, but San Francisco, the 49ers, played in Palo Alto, California in Super Bowl 5th or Super Bowl 19, where they beat the Miami Dolphins 38-16. And then, of course, you had the Rams in the Memorial Coliseum lose to the Pittsburgh Steelers 31-19 in 1979. The way these tickets are distributed, especially this year, I don't see where a home field advantage really makes a difference.
Oh, no way. I don't think it will at all. I think it's going to be a really good game between the two teams, but I can't see, because there's going to be like 25,000 fans in the stands, and a good amount of those are corporate people too. So I don't think the home crowd's going to matter at all.
Yeah, there'll probably be as many regular fans in the crowd as if there was if it was a full house, if you know what I mean.
Exactly.
Because that's the way this works.
Yeah.
Now, I think, to me, the biggest thing in any football game is up front in the trenches. And in the trenches, to me, Sam Teets, offensive line versus defensive line. And where this is the biggest, I think, is Tampa Bay's D-line against Kansas City's offensive line, because you don't have to blitz Mahomes. And the thing that I don't understand is playing a couple yards off of Tyreek Hill, I would double him. And my thing is this, I would play man press to try to take away the quick pass and to be able to let my defensive lineman and my linebacker, especially my defensive lineman, just go to work and get to Mahomes. And I think if that's the way I'm playing Mahomes in this game, that's what I would do.
Yeah, I would jam Tyreek Hill at the line of scrimmage and try to have someone over the top to help out if you get burnt, because frankly, you can't be giving up the big plays this game. It can't happen. Because if Tyreek makes some mistakes, and you probably will this game based on what he's done the past two, then you cannot allow the quick players or the big players to come out of Kansas City's offense. And frankly, the defensive line for Tampa Bay might be the best unit overall in this entire game. Might be better than Kansas City's wide receivers, might be better than anyone else, because they have Vita Vea, who came back from injury, was not 100% last week, but Vita Vea is an absolute monster. He's a wrecking ball in the middle. You put him next to Dominican Sue, you got Shaq Barrett and JPP on the edges, and Devin Way occasionally coming in as a blitzer. I mean, that's a tremendous pass rush there that very few teams can match. And you've got, for Kansas City, a bunch of solid offensive linemen, two backup tackles. It's not the great unit to put out there against one of the best pass rushers in football.
All right. David, I don't know how many teams will be knocking down Todd Bowles' door to become a head coach again. Let me know when you see that happen, because you won't. You will see it happen at some point. The other thing is this. Most coaches that are hired in the NFL today are not qualified to be NFL head coaches. So the fact that Todd Bowles is not being hired to me, Steve Rizzer, means he's qualified.
Yeah, absolutely. You would know with your head coach, Zach Taylor, that a lot of head coaches.
Exactly.
I'll also point out here that Leslie Frazier was getting job interviews this offseason as well. Leslie Frazier's a guy who had one 10-win season in Minnesota and a bunch of 3-5-win seasons as well. So he basically has the same record, or close to the same record, as Todd Bowles.
He's Minnesota. Getting job offers. In Minnesota, you get much more help. Leslie Frazier sucks as a coach. Go ahead, Steve.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, Mike's right about, yeah, there's a lot of coaches that aren't qualified. Even guys who were hired, I think, this year were not qualified. That Nick Sirianni guy in Philadelphia, that could be an absolute disaster. I don't think he's qualified as to be a head coach. So, and still, it's beyond me that Eric Bieniemy hasn't gotten a head coaching job. I mean, he's been the
– It's not me. Eric Bieniemy will be a complete and utter failure in the NFL.
Mike's not a big fan of Eric
Bieniemy. You're not a big Eric Bieniemy guy? No.
Well, I'm not a big Eric Bieniemy guy, because I want my coach to have some character.
Oh, and, I know.
And I'm not talking about that even. I'm talking about in Colorado, he was a terrible coach. What makes you think he's going to the NFL? We all know Andy Reid calls the plays. Yeah. Eric Bieniemy is getting a lot of push right now because of the color of his skin. Todd Bowles would be a better head coach.
Yeah, well, yeah, because, yeah, you have a point there because of what Bowles did in year one with the Jets. I mean, yeah, so it'd be nice to see Bowles get another opportunity. I mean, it'll take a couple of years, But if, but say the Tampa Bay wins a couple wins a Super Bowl, if say they repeat a Super Bowl champions and their defense keeps playing that way, Bowles, I think Bowles could definitely get another opportunity.
Well, with Bruce Arians, with Bruce Arians' age, he could be the next head coach in Tampa Bay.
Absolutely, yeah.
I was gonna say comparatively, I would still take Bieniemy over a bunch of the guys that got hired this year.
I mean, think about any of them; none of them are qualified. There's so many guys in the NFL to get hired just because they know Sean McVay. They're Yeah. I mean, I'm thinking about going out, hanging out with him for a week, and then going back and tell everybody I hung out with Sean McVay. I'll be the head coach.
You could be the next head coach of the Cincinnati Bengals.
Yeah. I don't want to do that. I mean, I wouldn't want to be the Florida Lions. Hell, why would I want to do that? I mean, number one, they expect you to work like a lot. I just want to coach a football team and have some fun. That's about it. I'm old now. I don't need to stress. But because stress gets to me sometimes. McGinnis knows that. See? And McGinnis didn't even go to Panama City. If he'd have been there, see, I wouldn't.
Oh, my goodness.
I wouldn't have got tossed from the game if McGinnis was there, because he always calmed me down, because he'd be over there hyperventilating and I'd have to go take care of him.
Dude, I swear, it's not because I'm actually super tired. It's because my lungs are freaking small. So I breathe way more than everybody else does all the time. Like, you're going to pass out? No, I just.
Hey, small lungs doesn't keep you from making tackles on the edge. All right, let's go to the next question. Who's got the better secondary, McGinnis?
I mean, I would think Tampa Bay.
Tate?
No, I'm going Kansas City. Kansas City played phenomenal against Josh Allen this past week. They got Snead. You've got Juan Thornhill, who hasn't played great all year, but was great against Buffalo. And you've got Tyrann Mathieu, who's the best defensive back in this football game.
I'm definitely going with the Chiefs. Just alone having Tyrann Mathieu makes them a better secondary. Tyrann Mathieu's still one of the best safeties in football. Tampa Bay secondary, yeah. I mean, Carlton Davis has played better. Sean Murphy Bunting has played better. I like Antoine Winfield Jr., but that's the glaring weakness of their defense, their secondary. The Chiefs, their glaring weakness is linebacker. So just because they have a guy like Tyrann Mathieu alone, I'm taking the Chiefs secondary.
All right, so I think to me the thing that concerns me if I'm a Chiefs fan is the front seven of the Kansas City Chiefs, because I really think this. I think if the Buccaneers are smart, Steve Risser, they're going to come out and try to run with those two running backs right at the Chiefs, because I still don't think the Chiefs' run defense is that good.
It isn't, and I think they should be in 12 personnel, and then that's two tight ends and one running back. So I think Cameron Brayton, Rob Gronkowski should be on the field, and they should, and their focus on offense should be to run the football. I think it should be to run the football, keep Mahomes off the field, play action for Tom Brady, get the ball to Rob Gronkowski, get the ball to those receivers. I think they should be they should play this game running the football. They should run the ball in this game. That should be their main focus on offense in this game.
All right, do you agree, Sam McGinnis?
Yeah, actually, because if you have a weak defense, and again, I just got done saying this a little earlier, regardless of what your game plan is, Kansas City is going to score at least a decent amount of points. So keeping their offense off the field as much as possible should be the game plan here.
All right, Mad Chaz says Mahomes will be on the run, two starting tackles out, Tampa Bay 35-31. I'll tell you, I mean, when I pick a football game, and Sam knows this, both Sams, I'm going with the team with the better O-line and a better D-line. And right now with the Chiefs' injuries on the O-line, I think that Tampa Bay is better on both sides of the ball, Teets.
Now, I'm not going to disagree with you there. On both lines, I think you're right, they are better. And looking at Kansas City's defensive line, we talked about, they have Chris Jones, who's their star, but he's primarily a pass rusher. I mean, he doesn't play a huge role in the running game. Frank Clark has come a little bit alive here in the past couple weeks, but again, primarily a pass rusher. Don't have a lot of help in that running game. And the linebackers in this system basically are non-existent. They play pass coverage most of the time. They're not that much downhill. They're not much effective. They're not very effective in the running game. Meanwhile, you got Ronald Jones and Leonard Fournette, who are both hitting their strides right now going into the Super Bowl. It'll be very interesting to see how this plays out. I think you could run the ball for a significant amount of plays against Kansas City. It's just a question of whether, if you get behind early against Kansas City, you cannot run the ball and try to grind out clock while trying to score against the fast Kansas City offense.
How about this, though? If most teams, when they're down 10 to nothing, give up trying to run the ball. You don't give the ball you don't give it up at that point. I think a lot of teams give up because they panic and don't think they can stop the other team. I think the difference is here, I think Tampa Bay can at least slow Kansas City down. Now, James Ciampa says Rob Gronkowski is going to be a big factor. I believe that, too, and I believe he's a big factor in the run game. We saw in the Super Bowl against the Rams a few years ago, Steve Risser, I mean, Rob Gronkowski's biggest impact in that game was his ability to run block. And especially on the edge with a guy like Ronald Jones, he could be a huge factor here and not even catch a pass.
Oh, without question. Yeah, if he can run block well, that's going to set up what Tampa Bay wants to do on offense with play action with Tom Brady. So, yeah, he's going to be a huge factor in the run game. I completely agree with that. He probably will obviously be a bigger factor in the run game than he's going to be in the pass game. I really could see Gronkowski being a factor in the run game, because obviously the best way to beat this Kansas City team, and everybody said it all week, is just keep Mahomes off the field. And if Tampa Bay could possess the ball, they could win the time of possession. I'm not going to give my pick, but they have a good chance of winning this game.
Well, how about this? They can win a game like that, but I think they can also just outscore them. I mean, this is a game where it could be 48-45 and they could win.
I just think it's very tough to win a shootout against the Chiefs. I think you have to possess the ball. You have to keep their offense off the field. I just think it's very, very hard to win a shootout against this Kansas City team.
Yeah, but I'll tell you, Tampa Bay's wide receivers, if they're all healthy, are one of the few units that are close to Kansas City.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, I could see them winning a shootout. I just think the best way is to keep their offense off the field. But, yeah, no, I give you credit. We're talking about Kansas City's wide receivers. They're outstanding, and they could definitely make a difference in this game, especially because I think Kansas City is going to play a lot of man coverage. I think Spagnuolo is going to blitz Brady a lot, because that's the one way to beat Tom Brady, is get pressure on Brady, and I think Kansas City is going to have pressure, going to have trouble getting there with four guys. So I think Spagnuolo is going to blitz a lot. So Brady's going to be throwing a lot of deep balls. So there's going to be a lot of 50-50 balls where those receivers are going to have a chance to make plays.
Well, how about this? When you look at that, if you look at Tom Brady 6 or 7 years ago in his prime, you would never think of blitzing him. The way to beat him was the way the Giants did it in Super Bowl 42.
When you pressure with four guys
to put the pressure, everybody else is in coverage. My concern, Sam McGinnis, and I know you hate Tom Brady with a passion because you're un-American, but when you look at this, we just watched Brady throw three picks 2 weeks ago. And throwing the ball down the field, a little more dangerous. He's a little older. If they're blitzing him, maybe he gets a little bit tired. My concern here is this. I think Tampa Bay is just as talented as Kansas City. I think they can win the game. The thing that scares me away from picking it is the fact that I think Patrick Mahomes may turn the ball over once. Tom Brady may turn it over two or three times, though.
Yeah, and I think the greatest example of Tom Brady changing from his prime was when he was playing the Packers. You all saw the rusher come around from the edge, and he just launched that ball without even really thinking about it, knowing his receiver was somewhere over there. It wasn't accurate, and it was out of fear of getting hit or sacked.
No, it wasn't. Sam, you've heard me tell quarterbacks this all the time. If you throw an interception, throw it deep down the field. It was third down. They were at midfield. He chucks the ball 35 yards downfield. He takes a shot. If his guy doesn't catch it, it's like a punt.
It was still a horrible pass either way.
Yeah, he was getting hit in the ribs. How do you want him to throw it?
I think he should have taken the sack, personally. Yeah. But
if he takes the sack, it's fourth down and a punt, and they put him around the 15 or 20-yard line, which is what the interception did.
Here's my thing. I think you're right in the fact that saying that Tom Brady could turn the ball over more times than Patrick Mahomes. I think if it's going to be something, it won't be multiple picks. One of them will probably be a fumble because Kansas City will be blitzing a lot. So I think there's a potential here that you could have one interception and one fumble, something of that nature.
All right. I think also this, Sam Teets, and we talked about the running backs in this game. If you're going to blitz him, I think a guy like Ronald Jones on the edge catching a pass could be a big thing too. You can back the blitz off by hitting that short pass. You can also do it with Cameron Brate, Rob Gronkowski, your tight ends. So if they could nullify that and come out and maybe get them to back off that blitz, then I think Tampa Bay has really got a shot at this.
Yeah, you do have to worry a little bit. Ronald Jones and Lunsford have dropped passes in the past, but like I said, they're also hitting their strides here going into the playoffs in the biggest game of the season. So I would be looking to get guys like Jones the ball on the outside just because of all the athleticism and all the pop he's had in his set the past couple of weeks. He's looked much better than he did last year, even at the start of this season. He's been fantastic. And we're looking at pressuring Brady. He's been sacked three times. I want to say three or four times this year, and it's been by teams like New Orleans has done it twice. I think Chicago did it with Khalil Mack, and you also have Washington that did it a couple weeks ago. So these have been great defensive fronts with multiple players who have been sack leaders or close to sack leaders in the past. You don't necessarily have that in Kansas City. You do have Frank Clark and Chris Jones, but I think there's an opportunity here for Brady to get sacked maybe only once or twice this game.
All right. If Brady only gets sacked once or twice in this game, Tampa Bay will win the game.
Yeah,
I think. And the other X factor to me is place kicking and special teams. And Ryan Succop has been really good this year, but he did miss an extra point in a wild card game. And if you got a game that does end up 42-41, you know, one missed extra point could be the difference. And then you've got Harrison Butker, who missed one this postseason. He missed 7 overall this season. Plus, he botched a field goal attempt versus Cleveland, which added up to 4 points, which actually gave the Browns a chance to win the game at the end. So I would give the advantage here, Steve Rizzer, to Tampa Bay and the special teams.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Buckner struggled against the Browns, and, yeah, Succop has been pretty good this season. So, yeah, special teams. Yeah, I mean, people don't talk about special teams at all, but it could definitely make a difference in, like, a close game. So, yeah, say the team is, like, a 35-34 game. You know, one missed extra point. And the thing is, 6 years ago, they changed that rule where they moved back the extra point. It's definitely been a much more difficult kick, and it has decided a couple games, especially postseason games. So, yeah, special teams definitely could play a factor. I wouldn't be surprised if it does.
Do you like that rule now, Steve?
I do, because it makes that play more watchable. Like back when it was like a 19-yard field goal, the extra point, it was an unwatchable play. Now it's not guaranteed. The extra point is not automatic. I actually like it.
See, I don't like it because I'm a Bengals fan. And that means there's just one other way they could excruciatingly lose a game.
Yeah, I could see that. I could see that.
Steve, what team did you cheer for?
I'm a Giants fan.
Oh, okay, so your team sucks just as bad as mine. And you have no hope either because you got Daniel Jones as your quarterback.
Get him a number one receiver, and I think next year is a big year for him. If he doesn't step up the next year, I'm willing to get rid of him.
How does the number one receiver keep him from fumbling the ball 27 times a game?
I get it. But I feel like, you know, he cut down on the turnovers in the second half of the year. He didn't turn over the ball that much. But as you said, the issues with him are turnovers, and he has trouble staying healthy. So I'm not, as a Giants fan, I'm not totally sold on him, but I'm not giving up on him yet. But if we're 6-10 next year, I'm ready to get rid of him.
You're going to be at least, at best, you'll be 6-10 next year. I like Joe Judge, but I think the quarterback position is going to get him fired if they.
Yeah, and the GM's going to get him fired too. That's what's going to get him fired if he gets fired.
Well, yeah, in New York, GMs always get you fired.
Exactly. Yeah.
Coughlin should still be there. I think he's a Hall of Fame coach to me.
Absolutely, without question. I mean, I think he's one of the most. He did an outstanding job. 2 Super Bowl championships. I mean, he even did a great job in Jacksonville. I mean, four out of the first 5 years of existence, he got into the playoffs.
What he did in Jacksonville is why he's a Hall of Fame coach to me. To take them to the damn near to Super Bowl, to the championship game, in only their second year, was really an amazing feat.
Oh, it was an unbelievable feat. And that's why when people were trying to run Coughlin out early in his career in New York, I'm like saying, this isn't totally his fault. I mean, Eli's been struggling a little bit. It's not totally his fault. Once Eli got things together, I mean, the team ended up winning 2 Super Bowls in 5 years.
Yeah, that was all luck, too. I'm just kidding. I just don't want to pick on Sam McGinnis because I'm a Bengals fan, but he's even worse. He's a Lions fan, Steve. Steve, have you ever known a Lions fan?
Yeah, I actually have a friend who works for the Lions front office, so – He's
well, he's not a Lions fan.
He's a Lions fan. Yeah, he gets paid by it. Works. He works in the video department. But
if McGinnis got paid to cheer for him, then I can understand.
Yeah, that. But yeah, no, I don't know a Lions fan personally. No.
Now you do.
Yes, yeah, exactly.
Cam. Yeah. All right. So let's go ahead. Who's going to win this game? We're going to start off with McGinnis, who's going to pick against Tom Brady no matter what.
So actually, this one, despite the fact that Tom Brady could, I got to stick with what I said earlier when me and Sam Teets a couple weeks back were on the Sam and Sam show. I am 8-4 right now in the playoffs, despite having a horrible wild card set, because that was a bad week for me. And I feel like I got to stick with my gut on this one. I think Kansas City will win this one. And I don't think it'll be as high scoring as we saw in the comments a few times. I think these defenses will actually stop them a few times. I think 31-27.
All right, Steve Rizzer.
I'm going with the Chiefs in this one. I think it's going to be a really good game, though. I think it's going to be back and forth. I think that, you know, yes, the Chiefs have their tackles out, but I think Andy Reid's going to game plan for that. I think Tampa Bay will do a good job limiting the big plays, but I do think Mahomes is going to drive him down the field. I do think that Tom Brady's going to have a good game, though, but I do think he's going to have that one bad turnover that's going to hurt them. I think that'll be the difference. I think Kansas City is going to take advantage of that. And I'm going to go with the better coach, and I'm going to go with the better quarterback. And I got the Chiefs repeating as Super Bowl champions, beating the Buccaneers 31-24.
All right, Greg Recchi wants to know, Sam McGinnis, who was the Lions quarterback the last time they won an NFL
game? That's an easy one.
I think I might know this.
Earl Morrell.
No.
It's an easy one.
You're supposed to be a Lions fan.
Bobby Lane. Yeah,
Bobby Lane.
Born in 1958.
Bobby Lane. It's Bobby Lane. Greg Gorecki. It wasn't Earl. Number one, his name was Earl Morrell. It wasn't Earl Morrell. Hey, Teets, look up real quick if Earl Morrell ever played for the Detroit Lions. Oh, look at that. Everybody left because they were upset that you said Earl Morrell. Oh, we thought everybody left out of embarrassment because Sam said Earl Morrell. Yeah, it was Tobin Rote, by the way.
He played, I guess, yeah, he did. He played for the Lions for 7 years, apparently.
Was that in 58?
Yeah, he arrived there in 58.
Okay, Lane left after 56, didn't he, or 57?
He was in that back the time.
The last time they won the championship was 1958, no?
Yeah, 1958.
So
but I was right. No, you weren't, because it was Bobby. It wasn't Bobby Lane. And you did. You said it was Earl Morrell. Tobin Rote's not the same as Earl Morrell. So, oh, yeah. Jason Chiappa continues with the outstanding questions. Does Mahorn yet knocked out?
Huh?
I know. Rick Mahorn was a really good player for the Pistons, though.
Oh, one of the – yeah, that bad boy Pistons team was legendary, yeah.
I love that team. They used to beat up on the Bulls. No, I don't think that's where James was going with it, Sam Teets, but we tried to make a joke out of it. All right. Did everybody pick again? Teets,
you didn't pick yet.
For Super Bowl.
See, is he going to switch is the question.
Here's what you've done. You, McGinnis, and you, Steve Rezer, have both picked the Chiefs, and you now put – Mike Compassion, perfect situation where we're all going to pick Kansas City, so he gets to pick Tampa Bay, so he gets to be the only one who's right in the situation. You guys have absolutely ruined this for me. You've made this a bad day.
That happens a lot, too, doesn't it, Teets?
Yeah, Mike will get to be the only person here on this show to pick Tampa Bay, and if they win, he'll brag about it to the end of time. I'm still going to pick Kansas City. I'll still take the Chiefs here. I'm not betting against Patrick Mahomes.
It doesn't matter if you're right or not, because in the end, you thought the Denver Broncos would make the playoffs this year.
That was before the season.
So, there you go. Lane was injured in the last part of the 1957 season. There you go. All right, so, let's see. Indianapolis Colts, Carson Wentz. I got to pick the game, don't I? I'm taking the Bucs. I think the Bucs are going to knock Rick Mahorn out of the game. No, I think that the Bucs, their defensive line and their offensive line win this game. I think it's 31-24, and I think the MVP of the game will be Leonard Fournette.
That's an interesting one.
Well, anybody can pick something easy. It's more fun to just throw something up on the wall, and if it sticks, I'll brag about it for a year.
That's fair. So,
all right. Carson Wentz to the Colts. This looks like it has a little bit of legs, Steve Rizzer. What do you think?
I really like it. You know, in that championship season in 2017, I mean, yes, Carson Wentz didn't he got hurt, but when he had that MVP season in 2017, Frank Wright was his offensive coordinator. So and you've seen since, Carson Wentz hasn't been the same quarterback. So I like the fact that Wentz and Wright would reunite. This is obviously a better roster than it would be with the Eagles. I think obviously a better offensive line, a better running game too. I think the defense is better. So I really think if the Colts can get Carson Wentz, I don't know if they'll be a Super Bowl contender, but I think they definitely have a very good chance to win the AFC South.
All right, Sam Teets.
Well, this would be a good move for Carson Wentz for all the reasons you've just mentioned: a better offensive line, better defense. Frankly, the receiving group is probably even better than what they have in Philadelphia, despite there not being a ton of receiving options there. The question, though, is it really a great move for the Colts? Do you really want that contract on your roster? Do you really want to risk? I mean, Carson Wentz, I still think, was a top eight, top seven quarterback going into the league at the start of last season. But do you really want to risk working with this guy who just got benched for Jalen Hurts, who has completed 57% of his passes, 16 touchdowns, 15 interceptions in 12 games? I don't know if you want to pay him like a top five quarterback when this guy's coming off a 15 interception season in just 12 games.
Rizzer?
I mean, the thing is, though, I think the situation in Philadelphia was awful last year. I mean, I think, you know, the weapons around him in the passing game were not good. The offensive line was terrible. Him and Peterson, I feel like, just weren't connecting at all. I think it was more this – yeah, I think Carson Wentz has definitely regressed, but I think the situation – I think the situation in Philadelphia is absolutely terrible right now, and it would be best for him just to get out of there.
McGinnis.
I've got something good to say about Carson Wentz for once. And to Steve's point, I don't think that Carson Wentz was given a fair shake. I thought we saw this last season, the worst possible version of Carson Wentz we could have gotten. And I think behind that O-line, he'll feel a lot more comfortable and do better. I don't think he'll ever return to that MVP form, but I think he'll be definitely better than he was this last season.
All right. My other question is this. You got like guys like Quentin Nelson and stuff are going to want to get paid too, but James Ciampa flunked English, so. And he once hit a three-horse parlay before I was born. I don't know what that has to do with anything, but. What the hell? James, keep listening. You're my favorite listener. All right. Deshaun Watson. Teets, where is the best fit for him? Where do you think he'll end up?
Well, that's two different places. But I think the best fits for him are either Miami or San Francisco. Because when you go to San Francisco, you get to work with Kyle Shanahan. They have some weapons there in Debo Samuel and Brandon Ayuk. The offensive line, as long as you bring back Trent Williams, the offensive line will be fine. The defense is going to be very good this coming season. So I think San Francisco makes a lot of sense because you automatically be potentially the best team in the NFC West. And also, like I said, Miami. Miami has some young offensive linemen who you still want to develop. But I do have Mike Gesicki. They have Devontae Parker, and they have a good defense. They have Brian Flores, who's a stable coach, who's going to give you much more stability than anything you've had in Houston before. And they have the draft assets to go out and trade for Deshaun Watson, unlike someone like San Francisco. So I think those are the two locations I'd be looking at right now.
McGinnis.
I agree with him on the best case scenario would be San Francisco, but I think it might even be more likely that because the organization he currently works for is horrible, that he could actually end up with the Patriots.
No.
They would never allow that.
I would see that as interesting and certainly possible.
I don't know if he'd want to go there.
I don't know if it matters what he wants. The organization clearly to this
it obviously cares about what he wants. Yeah, they obviously do care because they're going to trade him because he'll refuse to play.
That's caring about like money and stuff. Not.
And also, Deshaun Watson
Well, how's it caring about money?
Sorry, it's
no, certainly... Hold on, explain this. Deshaun Watson, you traded away his best players last year.
Yes.
You put him in a horrible organization in front of a horrible offensive line, which risks his life. It just does. So. How can you say that it's all about money to him? I don't think it's about money to him. He's already
the organization, not him.
But it doesn't matter. If it's all about money to them, then they don't really care where they send him, right?
Well, that was my point with the Patriots.
But here's the thing. It doesn't even matter because Deshaun Watson has a no-trade clause. So you say we're going to trade you to New England, and he doesn't want to go to New England. He just says, I'm not going to waive my no-trade clause, and the trade is invalid automatically. So Deshaun Watson essentially can say yay or nay to wherever they try to trade him.
So is there a scenario then where they could come up to him and be like, it's this or us? Would he pick the Patriots over the Texans?
No, he would just pick not playing because he has them under the knife then. And if he doesn't play for a year, he's going to come back the next year and still make $40 million. You'd take a year off, you're making $40 million, wouldn't you, Rizzer? I would.
Of course, yes.
Yeah. So, I mean, he has all the power here. They're going to do what he wants. To me, he's a New York Jet. I say that because – go ahead, Rizzer, because you're going to say you agree with me, and I like people like
you. Yeah, I agree with you because the Jets obviously have the most to give up. They could give up the number two pick, and they have another first-round pick, too, that they got in the Jamal Adams trade. So, his best bid is obviously San Francisco, but I think he ends up with the Jets just because of what the Jets are able to give up to end up to get it. That's why I think he ends up with the Jets.
How about this? If I'm Deshaun Watson looking at this, I'm looking at like if I go to New York, I become a god if I win a Super Bowl. If I do it in San Francisco, Joe Montana's still god.
Yeah, but the only issue with him going to New York is it's almost as bad as him going to as bad as him playing in Houston. Say he there's a big difference with him playing in Miami than playing in New York. The Jets are completely rebuilding, where Miami is right on the fringe of being a team. If they get Deshaun Watson, they would probably be a Super Bowl contender. So yeah, I think he goes to the Jets. But if I'm him, I'd much rather go to Miami.
I think this. I think he makes a lot more money in New York. I think that Deshaun Watson is a generational talent that believes he's going to win wherever he goes. I mean, let's face it. He took some Texas teams that were pretty bad to the playoffs. And I think he could probably do that with the Jets. Of course, he had DeAndre Hopkins. But I think the big kicker to me here is I think the Jets picked the right head coach. And I think the Dolphins have a good coach. I think the 49ers have a coach that I still question in big situations because I've seen him screw a couple of them up with leads in the fourth quarter. But, I mean, to me, he's an iconic figure if he goes to New York and pulls this off.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, if he could have the Jets having that parade down the Canyon of Heroes, he'll be remembered. He'll be remembered forever.
And see, that's my point. So that's what I want to do. I don't care how much money I'm going to make, even though if I am leading that parade, I'm going to have as much money as I possibly want, McGinnis. That's why I want to be a Jet, because I get all the money, but I also am remembered forever, and that's the most important thing.
I just don't know if you could do it with the Jets.
Well, you know what? Nobody thought the Rams would ever win a Super Bowl until Kurt Warner got there. And then Kurt Warner went to the Cardinals and got to the Super Bowl and damn near won it. So I think this, a generational talent will usually win it at some point, if you know what I mean. There's not too many guys that don't win it if you're a generational talent.
Dan Marino, the unfortunate odd man out there.
Well, I mean, it was just talent. He wasn't a generational quarterback. I mean, the guy lost two or three home AFC championship playoff games, and everybody wants to act like he never had any talent around him. He was the favorite in two playoff games by a touchdown that would have taken him to the Super Bowl. And in one of them against the Patriots, he got beat 31-14 and threw three interceptions against a team he beat twice during the regular season.
And then the Patriots got destroyed in the Super Bowl to the Bears. Yeah,
but that was a bad matchup because they were stupid enough to start Tony Eason instead of Steve Grogan. If they start Grogan, I think they'd only lost 40-10. All right, so last question. McGinnis, is Tom Brady the greatest quarterback that ever lived?
I feel like you're doing this just to make me dig my own grave.
No, because you don't know where I'm going with this. Sam Teets does, but
I do. Yeah.
I don't really think I can dispute this anymore.
Really?
Yeah.
So you're saying yes?
Yeah.
All right, Rizzer?
Oh, without question. I mean, 6 Super Bowl rings, 4 Super Bowl MVPs. And you really look at him, yeah, a lot of people will say in the first part of that Patriot dynasty, oh, it was the organization, it was the coach. Don't get me wrong, I think Belichick, an outstanding coach. But what he did in the second half of that dynasty with the Patriots was phenomenal. Down 10 against Seattle, the best defense in football, the Legion of Boom, he comes back and beats them. Down 28-3 in the Super Bowl without Rob Gronkowski against the Falcons, leads the greatest comeback in Super Bowl history. Even the year after that, he throws for 500 yards against the Eagles, even though they lose. And then, obviously, he wins another Super Bowl the year after. 6 Super Bowl titles. There's no question that Tom Brady is the greatest quarterback of all time.
Sam Teets.
I understand what Mike's going to go with this argument, where he's going to go with it.
All right, just be quiet then. Just let me go, because I don't want to hear this from you. We've already just said Joe Montana is the greatest quarterback that ever lived. And I say that because I don't care about records. If you told me right now I could have Joe Montana in his prime with 2 minutes left and I got to go 80 yards, I'll take him over Tom Brady any day of the week. Number one, who had to play the tougher competition just to get to the Super Bowl? I mean, people say he only went to 4 and he won 4. But I think people forget this. He's playing against
the Giants of the 80s. That was a great team. The Redskins.
Joe Gibbs.
Oh, yeah. Hall of Fame coach.
The Bears.
Yeah. Mike Ditka. Yeah.
The Rams. Eric Dickerson. John Robinson coaching the team. The Vikings had great teams. And I think this, who in the AFC was a great team the Patriots had to beat?
I'd say the Colts. The Colts win the Peyton Manning.
They were a good team.
You could say the Steelers, but they're probably the same with the Colts. The only one that the Steelers did win 2 Super Bowls in that time frame. They did.
But they weren't a great team.
Pittsburgh's defense during that time.
Sam Teets just happy he could talk about his Steelers in a good light for once.
Hey, how about this? McGinnis.
Watch your mouth, Lions fan.
This team went to the playoffs, which is why you got made fun of because they lost. Don't ever worry about your Lions making it to the playoffs.
No, not with Jared Goff.
I will also tell you this. In Joe Montana's career, he lost 7 playoff games. In 3 of those games, the main reason they lost, he was knocked out early. This is a guy who in 1981 beat the Dallas Cowboys with a, 80-some-yard drive at the end of the game to win it. He won the Super Bowl XVI. People always say what? He had Jerry Rice, Roger Craig, all these great players, right, McGinnis?
Yeah.
He actually didn't have Rice in the year they went 15-1.
He did. He did not have the leading rusher in 1981 for the Super Bowl 16 championship 49ers was who? Anybody got an answer? I only hold out hope with Rizzer. He looks kind of old like me.
I don't have it.
1981, Ricky Patton ran for a little over 500 yards.
Oh, yeah.
Joe Montana in the playoffs that year. We talked about it before. Lawrence Taylor's Giants. He beats 38-24, puts 38 points on him. He plays the Dallas Cowboys, doomsday defense. Puts 28 points on him. Plays the Bengals, who had, I think, one of the top three defenses in the NFL. Beats them 26-21. 82 strike season was a throw rate. 1983.
He's the fun bunch.
Hey, we got to get to the best part with a Lions fan, oh, Steve. Wait for it.
Gotcha, gotcha.
1983, divisional playoffs. They play the Detroit Lions. The Lions are winning the game. Joe Montana drives his team down. They kick a game-winning field goal. 83 championship game. They go to Washington. They're down 21-0 against the defending champions. Montana throws three touchdowns in the last 10 minutes to tie the game. There is a bogus holding call on Ronnie Lott when the Redskins are on their own 13. They gave him a first down. They go down, win the game. 1984, maybe the greatest football team that ever lived. They go 15-1. They lost to the Pittsburgh Steelers 20-17. Only lost that season. Still no Jerry Rice and John Taylor. And Joe Montana beats Dan Marino in the greatest Super Bowl matchup of quarterbacks of all time, I think, just because in 1984, Dan Marino put together a season that was completely unheard of at that time and probably people didn't normally do until 15 or 20 years later. 1985, they lose 17-3 to the Giants. Great defense. 1986,
49-3.
They lose 49-3. Montana was knocked out, what, mid, late first quarter in that game?
I think so, yeah.
And he was knocked out by a hit that today probably would have got Jim Burt fined about $100,000. Even though I think it's a clean hit, it wouldn't be today. So 1986, was it 86? He starts the season off. He doesn't even play because of his elbow. Doctors try to convince him not to play anymore because they thought his career was over. Shows up week 10, ends up winning the division. They lose to the Giants. 1987, they go 13-2. They get upset by Minnesota. Anthony Carter had maybe the greatest game I've ever seen a wide receiver have in a playoff game. Then you've got the controversy of Steve Young, who I think is a top six or seven quarterback all time, is Montana's backup. Everybody thinks he should be the starting quarterback. They benched Montana at the end of that 87 playoff game against the Vikings. In 1988, I think they were sitting at like 5-5, may not even make the playoffs. They're about to bench him and make Steve Young the starting quarterback. He wins five straight games. They make the playoffs. In the playoffs, they destroyed a really good Vikings team. I think it was like 38-9 or 31-9. And then they go to Chicago against Ditka's Bears.
Oh, beat him bad.
Below freezing, everybody say, well, Joe Montana can't win this game. This is Bears weather. Beats them 28-3. Super Bowl 23, the Bengals defense shuts down the 49ers the whole game. They've only got 13 points with 3 minutes left. Joe Montana walks on the field and takes that team 92 yards to win the Super Bowl. 1989, beat a great Rams team. Well, it would have been great if they'd had a quarterback that wasn't Chrissy Everett. But they beat the Rams, they beat the Giants, and then they beat John Elway in another classic Super Bowl match, 55-10. 1990. Steve knows this. He's a Giants fan. Leonard Marshall, in a hit that would probably get him penalized today, wipes out Joe Montana, damn near breaks his back, ends Montana's career. You know, this is the thing, Steve Rizzer. If Montana doesn't get hurt and they win that game and he wins a
They three-peat,
and it would have been his fifth Super Bowl in five attempts. He'd have beat a great Buffalo Bills team, which I think they could have done. And when you look at this right there, this conversation would be over because I don't think Tom Brady could ever achieve that. Now, he takes 2 years off, goes to Kansas City. Everybody thinks he's done. And takes him to a championship game. And to get to that championship game, he leads a last-second drive to tie the game and win in overtime against the Pittsburgh Steelers. Then he goes to Houston, the House of Pain, Buddy Ryan. They're getting their butts whipped. And all of a sudden, Montana turns it on in the second half, and they win. And then early third quarter against the Bills in the AFC Championship game, he gets knocked out of the game. They lose the game, but he got him in the championship game. When you look at his career, the competition he played or faced, I think was much better. I think the coaching he faced was much better. I mean, right now, how many great coaches do we have? Harbaugh, maybe Reed.
Harbaugh, Reed, and Belichick?
Yeah, that's it. You know, you could have Harbaugh, Reed, and Belichick. I'll take Gibbs and Walsh, just the two of them by themselves. And I'll be happy that my two can outcoach your three. So I think the competition was tougher. I think the game was different. Receivers were treated differently. Defenses were allowed to do more. You could knock it. I mean, if Tom Brady hit somebody like Leonard Marshall, or if Leonard Marshall hit Tom Brady today, they'd probably put him in jail for 10 years. It wouldn't be allowed. And I mean, nowadays, if you get a shot at a guy like that, you let up at the end so you can kindly cradle him, relax him into your womb, and lay down with him, because that's what you're expected to do. Football was much tougher back then. And I will still say this. Yeah, accomplishment. Tom Brady's the greatest. But you give me 2 minutes left and you can let me run either one of those guys on the field with any receivers in the world, I will take Joe Montana in a heartbeat. And it's not even close.
I just disagree. I just think with the career Brady's had.
It is fine. But what? How old are you?
30.
You don't know anything, then. You know more than these other two yahoos, but you're too young to know anything. You didn't see Joe Montana.
No, I'll give you that. Joe
Montana walk on a field. Game was over with 2 minutes left. Tom Brady coughed the ball up against the Eagles.
Yeah, he did. Yeah.
And the thing is this. Montana, people talk about, well, two of the Super Bowls he won were big blowouts. But they were against Dan Marino and John Elway. That's a lot different than who are the best quarterbacks that have been beaten by Tom Brady in the Super Bowl?
Russell Wilson.
Russell. Russell Wilson's probably the best. Matt Ryan. Matt Ryan hasn't won a Super Bowl.
Yeah. Remember that?
Kurt Warner. Yeah. I'd say Russell Wilson is better than Kurt Warner, but it's close. But yeah, I'd say Wilson, Warner, and Ryan.
All right. I will take. Any day,
McNabb, but he hasn't won anything.
I will take any day beating Elway, Marino, Kenny Anderson over whatever you got. I'm not going to throw Boomer Esiason. I don't like him. He's a bitch. He played horrible in that Super Bowl, cost us the game. But the thing is, this it's just like in that game, Super Bowl 23, Lewis Billups drops an interception at the start of the fourth quarter. Bengal fans to this day, if he'd caught the ball, we don't. No, you wouldn't. You wouldn't have won the game because Joe Montana was not going to let his team lose the Super Bowl. So I understand what you guys are saying. Everything they did, like Greg Gorecki said, Seattle beat themselves. I don't believe that, Greg, because I believe this. I believe they called the right play. The problem was the New England Patriots knew what they were going to call. Because right there, if you run the ball and you don't get in, you use your last timeout, then you have to throw the ball. You know, they got out-coached. Bill Belichick knew it was coming. Maybe don't call that play. I can understand it. And I don't think anybody ever beats themselves because the other team's got to make a play. And the play the New England Patriot defender made on
Malcolm Butler, yeah, it was a great play.
That was a great play. So I love Greg, but I don't like when people say they gave the game to you. Well, you got to be able to take it. I'm a Bengals fan, and I've seen a lot of teams give my team games, and we Lewis Billups the ball. We dropped the damn interception. So you got to be able to make the plays. So I understand Tom Brady, greatest of all time. Yeah, with these stats, I'll never disagree. I'll just say this. To me, you got 2 minutes left. I'll take Tom Brady before him. I'll take Joe Montana before him, and I'll give you this also. With 2 minutes left, I may take John Elway over both of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Elway was great in the clutch. I'll give you that.
Yeah, and it didn't matter if it was regular season or playoffs. So Tom Brady, greatest career of all time. You can call him the GOAT. I'll take Joe Montana and John Elway in the last 2 minutes of a game. What are you smirking at, Teets?
Nothing. I know. I'm nothing.
He's disagreeing. You can see it in his eye.
Add anything.
He's not disagreeing. He's sitting there with his eyes smiling and said, damn, he's got a point again.
What? I'm just gonna let you have this. I'll just let you have it. There's no point. I don't have the energy to fight you on this today.
Because you never win.
Well, no, there's no way to win with you. You'll never admit you're wrong, so there's no point.
Because I won't be wrong. What have I been wrong? You've been on here like 3 years with me now. How many times have I been wrong?
I've not been on here 3 years. We've been like a year and a half at most.
2 years. I don't, it's When you get older, oh, time you thought, goes faster.
You thought Thomas was the best tackle in the draft. That's probably the one since it jumps
Thomas.
Out.
Andrew Thomas.
Well, Andrew Thomas needs a coach. I didn't know he was going to the Giants when I said that. Give it a year or two if the Giants get a better offensive line coach, and we'll see.
Yeah, it got fired. Their O-line coach got fired in the middle of the season.
And then Thomas played much better in the second half of the season.
Yes.
I wouldn't give up on Andrew Thomas yet, because a year from now I'm going to be sitting here talking about the Giants in the Super Bowl and why Andrew Thomas is the guy. But I'll be picking Joe Burrow and the Bengals to beat him 27-24.
Hey, unless Andrew Thomas can throw the ball downfield, I don't think you're going to get to the Super Bowl through the Giants.
Right after the Giants have beaten the Lions in the NFC Championship game.
There's no way the Lions – Jared Goff? Oh, my goodness, no.
What's wrong with Jared Goff? You've had a lot worse quarterbacks.
This is true, but Jared Goff is definitely a downgrade from Matthew Stafford.
But the Lions stole that pick. I mean, that was a great – the Lions did a great job on that, I think.
Yeah.
How about I take your two first-round picks and Jared Goff?
Yeah. I mean, I think – Rizzer, what do you think? We haven't talked to you about it. I think the Lions made out there.
Yeah, I think this trade could obviously work for both teams. Yeah, Lions definitely getting those two first-round picks. And Jared Goff, I mean, yeah, he's not a great quarterback, but he's proven to get a team to the Super Bowl. So, yeah, I mean, the question is he going to be the guy going forward? That's the question. We don't know that. We'll see what happens there. But, yeah, the Lions, I mean, I like the trade Brad Holmes made getting those two first-round picks. And for the Rams – Stafford hasn't won a playoff game, but this will be the best team he's been on in his career, and obviously the best coach he's had in his career.
You better win the Super Bowl with him.
Oh, yeah. It's depending on what you gave up, seeing what you gave up, yeah.
Or at least get there.
Yeah.
All right. So we've got you three are going to be wrong by picking Kansas City. I'll be the one that's right, picking Tampa Bay. Do you guys all want to come back Monday to discuss the game?
Yeah, sure. I'm good. I'm good for that. Yeah.
All right. So we will be back 1:00 on Monday. See, I just wanted to be different, Sam, so we weren't all picking the same thing. By the way, Steve Risley also picked the Buccaneers, which makes me think I'm in trouble. But, all right, guys, you want to tell everybody where they can find you, Steve Risley?
Yes, Sports Talk with R&J, clovercrestmedia.com. So just go on there every Wednesday, 1:00, Sports Talk with R&J. Make sure you listen this week. We'll be recapping the Super Bowl. So, yeah, every Wednesday, 1:00, Clovercrest Media. That's where you find me. I'm on Twitter. I'm at Steve1290 and the show at Sports Talk with 9. That's the show's Twitter handle.
All right, Sam Teets, plug your NHL show and your Sam and Sam show and your Twitter handle.
I think you got
McGinnis, go for
mixed
it.
Up again because you scolded me earlier too.
Sam McGinnis.
He's got too many Sams to deal with. He had Sam Young, me.
I'm just glad Risley wasn't on today, because then we'd have had two Steves and two Sams. I'd have been completely confused.
There's so many. All right, yeah, but you can find me at SamuelMcG22 on Twitter and Instagram. You can also find me and Sam Teets doing our Sam and Sam show every Friday at 9:30. And now we might actually have the NHL show back up and running, depending on who we can get for that. And I'll try and get a regular time for that.
All right, Sam Teets.
Yeah, follow me on Twitter at Sam_Teets33. Constantly post new articles, polls, and stats there, so feel free to go check that place out.
All right, you can follow me at Grueling Truth. Make sure you go check out the Grueling Truth Facebook page. We're over 110,000 followers now, Teets.
Really? We got all the way up there. That's awesome.
People get really bored. All right, make sure you check out Sam and Sam again. You can check all of our shows out on Rockfin. You can sign up there for free. Make sure you do with your email address. And we will be back at 1:00 Monday with our Super Bowl recap show. Tonight at 7:00, we'll have a special Legends of Boxing show. I have Frankie Duarte on, who is a super bantamweight contender, fought for the world title a couple times in the early 1980s, overcame heroin before he fought for the title. He's a great story, great guy. So make sure you check me out with Frankie Duarte tonight. Check us out on Rockfin. Follow us at Grueling Truth. Make sure you check out the gruelingtruth.com page. And all our shows can be heard wherever you find podcasts. So for now, for Steve Risser, Sam McGinnis, Sam Teets, I'm Mike Goodpaster. You've been watching and listening to The Grueling Truth, where the legends speak.